Live from the mist-enshrouded mountaintop fortress that is X and Y Communications Headquarters, you're listening to the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
Hey, all right, this is Scott McKay once again coming at you with another episode of the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. Today, we're going to do something that you guys have been hammering me to cover for a long time. And I have to tell you, I have found probably as close to quintessentially perfect a co-host for this particular episode that you can imagine. He's a new friend of mine who hails from just north of here in Burney, Texas, basically still the San Antonio metro area. His name is Brian Ward, and he's the founder of Third Way Man. Brian, man, how's it going?
Great, Scott. Yeah, glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you know, I had found out about your work very recently by doing a Google search for things in my local area, people I could connect with. And my first thought when I saw what you were up to is, man, what has taken me so long to figure out this guy's here and get in touch with him? And sure enough, you and I talked over the phone and you're like my brother from another mother. Really, we're talking about being a real man who actually still loves, adores, cares about women, not being some sort of bad boy or a jerk, but just being a good, solid man of character who believes in masculinity and believes that feminine women still want that in today's world, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, kind of ships passing in the night here in the same neck of the woods.
Yeah. Now, your focus is a little different than mine in that you work primarily with dads and with men who are already married or in long-term relationships, where I have historically focused on guys who were single and looking for that one woman who was the woman of their dreams. So then you and I do have a lot of synergy there in that we're working with generally the same kind of guy cut out of the same cloth, except at different stages in their life.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about what you guys got going on at Third Way Man and how you work with guys who are raising children, sons and daughters, and also guys who are in marriages. What are the issues that those guys are looking at, and what are the things that you see coming up again and again?
Well, you know, one of the things that a lot of guys in this season of life have to deal with is a lack of support, and I think a lack of thought leadership about the situation of being in a long-term relationship. There's often this sense that once you're married and have kids, you're a self-contained family unit, and you're not really needing the same level of support or insight or camaraderie that single guys are often getting. And so, and to me, that experience is completely the opposite, where you're rarely more challenged and have more things going on than when you're in the throes of marriage and parenting young kids. And ironically, that's when we often have the least amount of support. So it's just a desire to open up the conversation and to talk about things that guys in this season of life are dealing with, but don't necessarily have a platform or a place to do that otherwise.
Yeah, two things there. First of all, when you get married, you find that you don't relate to your single guy friends as much. And then there's this other sort of insidious notion that, okay, now you have a wife. Now you're going to be making a family, having kids, and you don't need friends anymore. All of a sudden, your wife's friends are your friends. The couples who you meet are going to be your friends from now on. And sometimes we as guys even process that thought ourselves, don't we? That, hey, you know what? Having friends that I hung out with and did my thing with, rode motorcycles, went to the firing range, played golf with, that was something that happened in the past. Now things are going to be different. But there's really no reason for that to change, is there? Matter of fact, just like you said, we need the support of other guys at our station in life more than ever, maybe.
Oh, exactly. And I think a lot of people have this sense that once you're married, then a man is domesticated. And to me, it's the complete opposite. I have this saying that it's only the wildest men that marry, because really, if you think about the level of demand upon you, it's just for most men, it's just not matched anywhere else in their life with all the demands. And so right at the point where we need, if anything, to be pushing ourselves and challenging ourselves at a deeper level than ever before and having more input and more support and more challenge from other men, that's when most guys end up going backwards and they start scaling back and settling down and treating themselves like they've arrived. And that's the death spell, not just of that essential fire in the relationship, but also of your own personal growth. You know, marriage is not an arrival. It's just the starting line for a whole new season.
And I think you make an excellent point in that a lot of guys, I don't know, maybe we've been watching too many sitcoms, especially BBC ones from the UK, where guys just get pee-whipped as soon as they're married. And what we forget is that's a comedic device because of the irony involved. Yet nowadays, it seemed like it's the de rigueur norm for guys just to become, well, pussified as soon as they get into a marriage. That's what we all fear. And that's what we all think we're, in a way, surrendering to when we get married. But I love what you just said about, no, you know what? It's time to become that man who's a leader, who's a decision maker in the best interest of his family. And in many ways, that even means being dominant, which is sort of a dirty word nowadays, because a lot of guys conflate that with being a jerk or being, you know, a controlling idiot who,
yep,
you know, has his wife under his thumb. When in reality, you have to be dominant. You have to be a leader. You have to make decisions because your family depends upon that for survival. I mean, even if your wife has her own job, it's still a part of the feminine attraction mechanism towards masculinity that the man be capable of, well, protecting his ranch. Don't you think?
Absolutely. And like you said, a lot of women may think that what they want is, as you put it, a pussified man, someone who has scaled things back and has taken the edge off. And what they really want is someone to love them in a way that still exercises power, but without the old trappings of patriarchy and the dominance and the jerk factor that you talk about. And that's a difficult combination to achieve, but that's what I believe our call is as modern men. It's how do you love without it diminishing your innate power, where those two things, your strength and your love, are both held in tension at the same time. Because you, over the last few decades, you've had a real dramatic swing from one extreme to the other. I think historically, men have been seen as innately powerful, and that strength has been the chief, you know, characteristic that's been lauded in men. To the point where that's where we got that reputation and the chief criticism of being oppressive brutes. And then you've got the pendulum swinging the other way, where you've got men that feel like they have to apologize for having a pair of testicles between their legs. And it's swung so far the other way that they've, you know, tripping over themselves to get rid of their strength and to appear weak, to placate and to pacify women. But like you just said, that doesn't serve either, because you still have to defend the ranch. You have to be the leader of your family emotionally, spiritually, physically, and all those different ways that traditionally men have provided for their families. So the answer is not to give up one for the other, but to figure out how to live in a way that manifests both love and strength in equal measure.
Now, see, Brian, this is what I like about your message. This is why I immediately gravitated to your whole operation of what you're doing with married guys and fathers, is because you're willing to cross that line. And very few of us are. And the line I'm referring to is thinking for ourselves relative to the feminist movement. And by that, I mean feminism with a capital F, not the idea of feminism, which is equality that I think most of the men who I know, at least, are certainly on board with, unless they're truly boorish. Mm-hmm. And yet you're still willing and able and powerful enough as a man to stand up for masculinity without delving into the whole men's rights activism routine of, you know, trying to take our power back vis-a-vis feminism. For you, like me, it's not a fight. It's something that we as men should sort out. Is there something really to be gained by learning how to be more vulnerable and not be so boorish and not find it so difficult to ask for help when we need it to the point where we're dying young and suffering under here? I mean, you're very, very good, I think, at finding that balance of, hey, you know, here's where we as men really do need to improve. Here's the point of modern day culture that I think we do need to take to heart, while at the same time saying, hey, you know what? Your masculinity isn't toxic, man. You are born to be a man, and here's what that means. And it doesn't mean softening up and turning female. It means still grabbing a pair and being all the man you were born to be, even in the context of your marriage and fatherhood. I want you to talk more about your vision for that, because I think it's just a powerful conversation that really nobody dares to have nowadays.
Yeah, well, as you said, you know, there's this, I think it's the wrong response to go looking for answers to our wives, to basically allow feminism or different women to define the conversation that men need to be having with themselves and with each other. I think the big contribution from today's woman is to say, look, guys, you got to figure your stuff out because we need you strong, but we also need you engaged and loving. And so far, historically, we've not had that at the level that we desire and that we need. And that's an amazing challenge. And like in any good relationship, you don't want just constant confirmation and patting on the ass. You know, you want to be challenged and stretched so that you end up becoming a better version of yourself for that relationship. So writ large, you know, when you look at the nature of how men and women are relating today, I think that's hugely valuable. But we can't leave it at that and basically say, okay, you know, women in our lives, we as men have this legacy that's complicated. Tell us what to do. We've done bad. How do we fix it? First off, we end up poisoning that part of us that can rise and be confident and to be present with too much guilt. And I think men are almost too good at taking guilt of others upon their shoulders. And I think we need to learn from the dynamics and how things have evolved and become more complicated between the genders over the years. But as soon as we take on, you know, the quote unquote sins of the fathers, we end up bogging ourselves down with guilt that is not ours to bear. The male spark is a fragile thing. And if you take on these things that we really shouldn't properly be taking on, you run the risk of destroying that spark. So I do think that that's where the conversation starts. But then we need to have our own definition of what things look like going forward. And we need to be having these conversations about how to be as men with ourselves and with other men and not have that as a problem that we bring, like Tommy needing a Band-Aid to his mother. You know, that's not what our wives need from us.
So what I hear you saying is the very cry from angry women against the quote unquote patriarchy is that men for literally millennia, since the beginning of recorded male female time as Homo sapiens or maybe even beyond, we as men have been telling women what to do and how to be and defining who they are. And that's felt quote unquote oppressive to women. Yet many men are responding in a knee-jerk way, just handing our power right back to women, letting them assume sort of a matriarchal role over us and defining what it means for us to be men. And you should be more feminine. And it seems like women are, I don't know, it's become more of a power struggle and a grab for retribution of some sort on the part of particularly angry women than it is a matter of let's all get along better and, you know, coexist more peacefully as men and women and attract each other more. And I think that's really fascinating because you're right on. A bunch of men are falling right into that trap. And as you were speaking, it's occurred to me again. I mean, it's not an original thought between either of us, but it definitely is true that we as men have in our nature that desire to provide and protect and pacify women, to literally create peace amongst the women in our life and the people who we love, because we're not destroyers. We're not the vice-ridden, toxic masculine beings that some angry women want to paint us as, but rather most of us are quite decent, moral men of high character who really want to provide and protect. So if our women are angry, we want to do what it takes to make things better. That's what we do as men. We provide and protect. And so in some of our minds, we've decided that what that means is to give these women what they say they want, which is a more passive man who's got more feminine qualities. And ironic as it seems, Brian, that masculine urge in us is part of what's causing us to respond as an overcorrection, definitely, with more femininity and more softness. Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And exactly. That's not what they need. That's not what they want. And we live in an amazing time where the bar has been raised. You know, our women have thrown down a gauntlet and said, we expect more and we expect better. And like you said, that's a complicated thing because we can't just allow them to define those terms, because part of the leadership of a man is defining for himself what that higher bar looks like. But it is a gift to have that gauntlet thrown down in a general form where we have millions, billions of women imploring us as men to play at a higher level. And just to revisit something that you said, you know, I think there's this temptation to to say about ourselves, you know, I'm not one of those kinds of men. I'm not one of those barbaric. I'm not vice riddled. I'm not this or that. And I think there's problems responding that way, because the whole essence of a man is that we do have that capacity for danger. And those are not bad. They may not be something that we need or are called upon to employ in everyday life, but we better have that ability to rip limbs out on the rare occasion that's called for. We may never have to enact that ability in our lifetime, but we better be prepared to do that. And so I think we run the risk of saying, look, you know, I'm this enlightened modern day man that doesn't have all this barbarism. Well, no, we need that. But it's a matter of knowing when and how to deploy that in a way that's cognizant of not just using that as our default kind of petulant child sort of response. So I know that's a bit of a complicated sort of answer to your question, but I do think it's important to point out that we kind of hollow ourselves out as men if we're too quick to downplay or to disown that barbaric nature that we have.
Well, I think also a lot of us as men, perhaps most of us in our nice, peaceful, comfortable Western culture, never feel like that we really have to have that barbarism intact within us. We don't feel like we're ever going to have to protect our village against these people who are raping and pillaging. We don't ever have to rip limbs out. I mean, unless we've gone through the military and done that with honors and so forth. I mean, many of us don't really have those life or death situations that really call for extreme protection and provision.
Yeah, exactly.
What's a man to do? How's a man to reconcile his lifestyle here in the 21st century against that need to retain that manliness? It's almost like, you know, we have to have the capability to be a Rottweiler who is an attack dog and a watchdog while still loving our families and protecting them. We need to almost be that Porsche GT3 with the ability to go 200 miles an hour, even though in our daily lives, we usually have to keep it within the speed limit for obvious reasons.
Walmart. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Right?
How do we reconcile all that? What's a guy to do?
I call that the peacetime paradox, because we obviously are grateful to not to be living in those sorts of conditions. But there's that part of us that is wired for war. And so when we don't have that, there's this kind of deep discontent or this confusion that we have at like the cellular level, where we're not quite sure what to do. You know, when shit is falling apart, we know exactly what's demanded of us. We're to protect and to provide. And it's amazing how we fall almost without thinking into those roles. When we're faced with peacetime, the onus is on us to create our own war. And I don't mean to go out and literally blow stuff up, but I'm talking about choosing a battle. And I call it battles of creation versus battles of destruction, where you say, look, I'm not going to just rest on my laurels here and fatten up on the spoils of other men's victory or past generations' victories. But I need to go out and find my own mountain to climb, my own battle to fight. And when that's something that you have to initiate on your own accord, it's a lot more difficult. Obviously, it requires a lot of motivation and drivenness. And that's why so many men don't do it. But the cost is real. And that's why I think, as you said, there's such a high suicide rate, and you have alcoholism and other addictions that we're plagued by in record number, is because we haven't realized that despite the external peacetime, that's not where we thrive. We've got to figure out our own chosen conflict and get to it.
You know, the topic that's on the table right now, the little subtopic within the larger topic we're discussing in general, is so loaded nowadays. Because I don't think men even realize what is happening to them. I don't think we realize we need a war. I think we've been deprogrammed, even as children and teens, as young boys, to wipe that slate, to wipe that programming and say, no, you know what? What you need to do is soften up and live life more like women. You know, you don't need to go out to war or anything like that. But boys inherently have that need to provide and protect and to feel potent and feel competent and feel powerful. And what's left is, yes, we're watching it all happen on TV. we're watching NFL football games, and they're even trying to take NFL football away from us slowly but surely, in case you haven't noticed.
Yeah.
That's the political underpinning of what's going on with NFL right now. And of course, we're playing these video games that are all shoot 'em up, et cetera, et cetera. And what's going on is you have boys walking into their schools, taking out a gun and taking out their aggressions that way. I'm going to give you a first person chance to comment on how all that might tie together, because I have all my views and I've talked about them at length in this show. But I want to hear what you think's going on there. What's happening with our young boys? Obviously, not all of them are taking out their aggressions in the form of killing their peers at school, but some are. And the pattern seems to be there in terms of what kind of kids doing that. And I want to hear what you have to say about that.
Yeah, well, it's a great question. I think, you know, we are deep into a social experiment where we are fundamentally changing, seeking to fundamentally change the roles of men and women and how they relate to each other. And some of that is overdue. But at the heart of it, there are obviously unintended consequences that are only just now starting to play out. And we're only just a generation or two into this. So who knows what this is going to look like 10, 20, 30 years out. I think we're just scratching the surface in terms of what some of those unintended consequences and wholesale reshuffling of the social order is going to look like. So like you said, there's all sorts of threads we can pull on that may have some connections, but I think at the heart of it, that is the risk that we run. So again, I think the answer is in terms of our sons and how we, you know, prepare them for the reality of this new social order while still, you know, hearkening back to that primal kind of orientation that we have to power and to protect and to provide. You know, I think it comes back to being engaged and present with your kids and not trusting that the government sponsored programs and curriculums are going to do the job, because the track record there is pretty poor. And I think just as a principle, no one's going to be more invested and interested in your kids thriving as you. And so I'm a big fan of after schooling is one term that I've heard, where you basically don't give over the power of your kids' wholesale big picture education to the school system. But you take them on the trips, you teach them how to start a fire, you take them fishing and hunting and do all these things that even beyond the specific skills you're teaching, even beyond that, it becomes the stage on which you can role model and convey all these masculine legacies that they otherwise don't have an opportunity to pick up.
I've said it before on this show, not in very great depth, but Emily and I homeschool our children. And one of the big drivers for that, in addition to the simple fact we wanted our freedom, we wanted to be able to travel and live life on our own terms and not be tied to the school district in the same way we'd be tied to a cubicle job, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But our son was a badass by the time he went to kindergarten. He was just a tough, gritty, good kid, but had a lot of self-confidence and could stand up for himself.
Mm-hmm.
By midway through first grade, he was a completely different kid. I mean, he was much softer, much more passive, and, you know, not responding with as much personal power as he had in the past. And that was frightening to us, because the teachers, every time he wanted to assert himself and do things that were commonly male or masculine, he was getting punished for it. So they were thwarting that natural masculinity in our son's life. And it was just a wake-up call for us. So I agree with you 100%. One of the things that we see as a recurring pattern, not every time, but most of the time when kids are committing heinous crimes in the school as young boys still, is that lack of father figure who was meaningful in terms of crafting their masculinity and shaping who they are. Also, they're being bullied and they're not being given the opportunity to have personal power, even as they're told, hey, you know what? You're a male. You're part of the patriarchy. You're part of these oppressors. And they don't feel very oppressive. They feel like they're the ones being bullied, and yet they're the ones being blamed. So, you know, like Bruce Springsteen said in one of his songs, you know, you end up like a dog that's been beat too much and you feel cornered, and you walk into school one day and you bring the war finally. And then, you know, there's the other aspect that Malcolm Gladwell talks about where there's sort of a tipping point where once Columbine happened, you had the blueprint. Then it was easier for the second kid to come along and copycat that. And the more examples we have, the more almost set in stone the pattern is, and everything kind of looks like a mini Columbine. I mean, the latest one, the kid even wore a trench coat.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just a sad state of affairs when that's how our young boys feel like they have to make a stand, when it's just completely, of course, inappropriate and tragic. And you get the feeling they had nobody to talk to about this, nobody to vent to, nobody who would understand their predicament. And you got to think that made it hurt even more. And of course, people want to blame it on guns and the NRA. And sure, we have some things we could do to help that along in this country and do better with our guns. But, you know, when there's a pattern amongst these young boys that you start seeing over and over again, I think it's time to start looking a little more closely at who these shooters are, not just what they're shooting with.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest ironies of our age is that never have we been in a better position to live as kings and take on the identity and to really create a type of kingdom for ourselves and our families. And yet we live more like consumers and peasants than we ever have in recent history. And I think the common thread there between what I just said and your comment on the school shootings is that consumer conditioning that we've had baked into us from a very early age. And in the same way that you've got these copycat shooters that are so used to just imitating what they've been shown through media and all the rest, we have, when it comes to how to process and deal with these disconnects or this pain or this guilt and shame about yourself that you don't know what to do with, instead of having the training and the conditioning for more creative ways of dealing with and addressing that, you have this knee-jerk consumerist sort of response that says, well, what is the standard way of dealing with this pain? What do people that have this sort of disconnect or disenfranchisement, what do they do? Oh, I guess they go out and they shoot all their schoolmates. And so, and again, that it might seem kind of crass, but it is in some ways a failure of the imagination that we are responsible for because we've allowed this, you know, insidious, nauseating sort of consumerist mentality to take hold right from the very beginning. Whereas, and something in a second thread to that is one of the messages that I'm most passionate about telling men is just the simple fact that being a man is good, that masculinity is a gift, that you're not a curse to the women around you, to your children, to society at large, as they're made to feel, but being a man is good. If you can tap into the power of that and apply that, not as a consumer where you're just living out these, you know, insipid sort of paradigms, but you're actually creating and using your power and your imagination as man is capable of, you are a force for incredible good. And I can't help but wonder if more of these young disenfranchised boys had that message and their imaginations were fired in ways and taught ways of directing that that restlessness towards creating new solutions or new artworks or businesses instead of turning that back on themselves in this sort of kind of restless self-hatred or self-loathing, you know, how different would things be?
These kids are looking for meaning. They're looking to make a name for themselves like any other man, any other young man, any other boy who wants to become a man. But instead of creating, instead of harnessing that power of their masculinity, it's almost as if they've bought into and surrendered to this idea of being toxic, and they're going to find a name for themselves. They're going to get a Wikipedia page by being a mass murderer.
Mm-hmm.
The last couple examples we've seen, the media has not released the names of the shooters, and I think that's a wonderful step in the right direction, frankly. I mean, as we record this particular show, we're getting to the end of the school year, so the world may not have really a good way to sample whether that lack of reporting the names of shooters has worked or not for quite a while yet, but I definitely think it's a good start. And what I want to talk about next with you, Brian, is what we as men, fathers, sons, husbands, brothers, what we can do in the context of our relationships to be the kind of man who really continues to attract women the way we should, the way we did when we first met the women in our lives. But before we get to that, I want to reintroduce you all to a new friend of the podcast who I mentioned for the first time last episode. And talking about being a consumer and talking about being a king in context of that, you want to be in charge of the decisions you make when it comes to your travel, and not just your hotels and your plane tickets, but of course your rental cars. And that's the part that really kind of slips through the cracks. You know, the damn rental cars would always comes up and bite you in the butt. You got the wrong car. You got the wrong pickup place. Someone came along later and had a much better deal. You may even walk up to the counter and there's a better deal. Oh, but they just gave the last one away. How does this happen? Well, there's not really a good clearinghouse online for you to be able to compare all these different rates for all these different rental cars. And even if there were, you'd have to do it all yourself. That's where my friends at autoslash.com come into play. Now, what you do is you go to autoslash.com and you put in some information about the kind of car you'd like to have, when you want to rent it, when you want to drop it off, where you're going to pick it up and drop it off from. And then what happens is, boom, you've outsourced this whole problem, this whole quandary to the AutoSlash folks, and they do all the heavy lifting for you. After you enter your information, give them your email address. Within about 20 or 30 minutes, they'll send you a message detailing all the best offers, and they guarantee that you'll have the best offer in front of you that you can possibly get. Now, what you do is you book the best offer and put that information in the AutoSlash.com site's tracking mechanism. And what they do is they get back to you and notify you when there's a better deal, even than the one you've pre-booked. So they're working for you all the time. Like I said, you've outsourced this to the AutoSlash folks, and it works like a charm. So go ahead and give it a try. It's over at autoslash.com, and I think you'll be thrilled with having this burden of getting the best deal for your auto rental off your back and putting it onto someone else's. It really works. And oh, by the way, it's a free service, so you couldn't really ask for more. Go to www.autoslash.com. That's AutoSlash. And tell them Scott sent you. And on that note, Brian, what is it that we really need to do as men to make sure we're living up to not only the legacy of every man before us who's taught us, to our fathers and grandfathers before them who have instilled into us what it means to be a masculine man, but how do we come through and be that hero for our wives and for our children in a way that's not destroying us, but rather empowers everybody involved?
A great question. I think the number one thing that I would recommend is to stop approaching marriage like a consumer, the way that most men approach everything, because that's been our conditioning, as we've discussed, and to take on the identity of a creator, to say, you know, marriage is not something that we get to like a finish line and then you've arrived and you get to enjoy the fruits of married life. I think that's completely backwards. Yes, there may have been a long courtship or this kind of male pursuit of the woman. And then once you've arrived, there is that almost biological tendency to say, okay, I've caught my quarry and I can relax now and enjoy the fruits of my labor. But that's where that sparks the end of the passion, and it sparks the end of your own experience of marriage as the adventure that it could be. So, you know, in the same way that an athlete, an extreme high performance athlete, is going to get copious amounts of sleep, really pay attention to their nutrition, and you know, treat themselves with that high level of regard, you know, a dad has to have the same mentality, but it goes far beyond the physical. You know, you are in the most demanding and rewarding season of your life when you are a family man. And so you need to rest and to exercise and to eat like an elite athlete, because you have the same opportunity and level of challenge before you. Instead of treating your wife and your family as something that you've won, like this prize to be won, see it as an opportunity to create an amazing family life. You know, ask yourself, okay, you may have the hand of the maiden, if you want to use kind of the old knight language, but can you actually go the next step and turn her into a queen? Can you treat and raise your sons and daughters so that they have the life of a prince and a princess, and create a family life that is increasingly richer and more abundant each and every year? And again, men are wired for challenge. And so if you get that fundamental relationship wrong, I think that's where you have so many men, so many husbands and fathers that are just checked out. They have the glazed over eyes and they're smiling and nodding and putting in the time, but they're no longer engaged because they have their relationship to their marriage and their families back asswards. You know, instead of treating it as this mantle, as this opportunity to step up the game even higher, they've treated it as the pinnacle of their life, and then they're confused that they no longer feel alive and challenged.
I think in some ways it's just a continuation of that malaise, that laziness that's affected men for at least the last generation or two.
Absolutely.
And they grow up kind of being slackers, then they get married and they slack in that area too.
Yeah.
We have to look in the mirror, gentlemen, and realize that what Brian's saying here is very real. I mean, especially if you're still having children at 45, the way I was, man, you got to drop the hammer on taking this obligation to be their father for the next 18, 20 years, at least, very seriously. And I'm not always the best at it. So that's a wake up call for me too. But you know, training your sons up to be men, representing to your daughters what it means to be the kind of man who should be affecting their lives and not being mistreated by a man, but being honored and protected and provided for by a man. Treating your sons in a way that shows them that they should learn how to be ready for anything, how to be prepared, how to be providers and protectors in their own right, instead of seeking to be provided and protected by everyone else or anyone else. All of that is incredibly important. It's mission critical. It's not just something that we give lip service to. And yeah, sounds really good when it's written, you know, on a meme on the internet. No, dads matter. And don't let anybody tell you they don't. And being a husband matters. Being the right man for the right woman and being the father your children need is not just of immense importance. It is quite possibly the greatest calling of any man's life. And for that reason, I really appreciate the work you're doing, Brian, and the words you've shared with us today. Lots of wisdom there.
Well, thanks, Scott.
You're welcome, man. And I want to give these guys a chance to find out more about you. Like I said, you're the founder of Third Way Man. Guys, you can go to thirdwayman.com and check him out. But as I always do for you, I'm also going to give you the URL in easy to remember form if you're a fan of this show. And that's www.mountaintoppodcast.com/ Let's make it Ward, W-A-R-D, for Brian Ward. So it's mountaintoppodcast.com/Ward. Find out more about Third Way Man. And guys, if you're already married to a great woman and you already have children in your life, either or actually, visit Brian and drink in some of the wisdom to be found there. Once again, Brian, I'm looking forward to collaborating with you more, especially since we're local to each other. I think that would create some great synergies. And for now, I'm especially pleased that you've been on the show and been able to share so much wonderful information with these guys. Thank you.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me, Scott. I appreciate it.
And guys, if you have not checked out mountaintoppodcast.com and gotten on to our newsletter so that I can send you ways to be a better man and be more attractive to the women in your life, definitely head over there to mountaintoppodcast.com. It's free. I send you information that you can absolutely use today. No fluff there. That's not our style. Actually, I'm a Texan, just like Mr. Brian Ward here is. And we are going to underpromise and overdeliver on that information we give to you. And for my part, it all starts by going to Mountaintop Podcast and signing up for that daily newsletter. 56,000 guys in the world get it on a daily basis, and you're next. It's a great way to become a better man, to maximize your manhood, and most of all, get the kind of women in your life you really want to get, all without having to pay a dime for that golden information. So until I talk to you again real soon, this is Scott McKay from X and Y Communications. Be good out there.
The Mountaintop Podcast is copyright 2016 by X and Y Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to visit www.mountaintoppodcast.com for show notes. And while you're there, sign up for the X and Y Communications newsletter. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the Mountaintop Podcast.